Hello, and welcome to Pod Space Nine, the last stop for trash in the Alpha Quadrant. This is a rewatch podcast for Star Trek Deep Space Nine, featuring two veteran viewers and one newbie. My name is Justin, and I'll be your way team commander. Joining me is my science officer, Anna, with our acting ensign, Jude. Jude, Anna, how are you doing?
I'm all right.
Yeah. Didn't clock in quite as many hours this week as last week, but it was definitely above 50, so, you know. Yeah,
not good.
It was lower than 60, but closer to 60 than it was 50. So,
yeah. Speaking as a frequent and former but frequent member of the 40 is for suckers hours per week club,
it fucking sucks.
It sucks. Yeah, it sucks. Yeah. There's no parsing it any other way than suckage. So I'm sorry to hear that.
Oh well. At least I have Deep Space Nine to, you know, console me.
Yeah, and a couple of good episodes too. DS9's been on a banger run here.
I mean, we're only talking about one episode tonight.
Well, but they've been on a banger run here these last few episodes.
Yeah. This is a episode that I was like, oh, I've been waiting for this. So, you know, ready for.
It feels, we'll get into it, but this feels like a very big turning point episode in the show.
Yeah, that would be accurate.
Okay, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Both. What is your worst vacation?
Ooh.
Ooh.
Ooh. Probably. Wow, where do you even start? When I was 12, my dad was overseeing the construction of a cancer research hospital in Pakistan. I swear to God, this is a true story.
Okay.
A number of things happened the summer that I went to visit my father in Pakistan while he was doing this. This was in the 90s. One of them was that we had summer camp at the consulate because it was not safe for American children to be outside of the consulate for several weeks. The second was that we did a drive. My dad decided randomly that we were going to do a van trip up to the Kashmir. If you know anything about geopolitics, you would know that that's not a place you should really take a van trip up to. But, you know, that's my dad for you. While there, I got sick because they rinsed the rice in water, and I got food. I got the usual thing that happens when you drink the water in places you're not familiar with. And my dad was too, you know, lazy to go out and get me another bottle of water at 2 a.m. So I drank the tap water, and you can guess what happened then. I was very, very ill. And then on the way back, the bridge washed out. And we had to be carried like baggage down one side of a ravine and up the other. Yeah, a whole host of fun stuff happened on that trip. I still actually do have fond memories of it. But I think objectively speaking, I feel like there's a probably good chance I wouldn't have come home from that vacation. So I feel like that's probably got to be the one.
Oof. Yeah, I think you have me beat on like sheer quantity of misery. I'm gonna go with the cumulative number of vacation days I've spent on just like family shit.
Yep.
I
don't think that counts. It is like,
I mean, this is not fun family shit. This is like the weeks of vacation vacation time I have spent to like clean out my mom's closet.
I think the spirit of the question here is, okay, where did you go planning to take a vacation and it was shit?
Yeah.
Okay, fair. Okay.
Yeah.
I once called off a week sick from work because of clinical, you know, of crippling depression.
Yeah. I'm curious what yours is, Justin.
Mine is that I have actually been snowed in once. My grandparents lived up sort of near Yosemite. And this would have been either like 2000, 2001, somewhere around that time. I can't remember the year it was. But we go up there for Christmas and it snows.
And it snows and it snows and it snows and it snows.
Yes. And my dad's little Toyota Camry, part of this is that the the layout was is that they had a big, long, very steep driveway.
Mm-hmm.
And this little Toyota Camry could not get out from that driveway.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
And it was basically like, and also to get to this little isolated remote area, you had to go on like this road, like that went up a mountain that you could literally see grave markers on the side of the road for where people fell off. This was a it was a horrifying experience always going to visit these people, like to visit my grandparents.
That's a thing. That's a thing.
So we were stuck there for a literal week. Which involved like hiking in the snow to go get groceries for like a half mile, which was not fun. Everybody was miserable. I'm pretty sure that is like 30% of the reason my parents divorced.
So that reminds me. I've got one here.
Okay.
This would have been when I was quite small, because there were family rule changes that resulted from this trip.
That's always a promising sign.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know how the area, you know, upstate New York, especially around like Lake Ontario, Finger Lakes, etc., is like it's a pretty the weather can be very variable, right? Mm-hmm. We were going to Rochester to do Christmas with family. And we're on the New York State Thruway, and we get caught in a just surprise blizzard.
Uh-oh.
And we ended up snowed in on the side of the New York State Thruway for I do not know how many hours, but it was many. We were just like in there trying to keep the car warm and like balancing, like keep the car warm, charge battery, and run out of gas. Not having anything like roadside assistance or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously too. So, but I will say that one of my more prominent memories from that particular experience was that we made the best of it because we had the cassette tapes for the Lord of the Rings like full cast dramatization, and we got through a lot of those. And I will say that this instituted the family rule that we, from that day on, we did not travel at all between Thanksgiving and Easter.
That's valid.
No travel for Christmas ever again. And this is a principle that I hold to this very day.
I get that.
Yeah.
You just triggered a memory in me of my dad once drove me, my brother, and my half-sister from Denver, Colorado, down to the very southmost part of Texas to spend a week with his siblings. And he had a tape that he bought at a gas station that was some sort of cowboy singing like Western songs with a ventriloquist puppet named Red. And of the songs was Elvira. And I, to this day, me and my brother can sing that whole song in the exact same way that tape, because that tape was played on repeat for like 3 days.
Oh my God.
I'm hearing it in my head right now.
I'm sorry.
That's terrifying.
A little bit.
So I think Jude wins. I think Jude wins this round.
Guys, yeah. I'm just going to throw this out there. I could do a top five. And they would all... I'm not saying your experiences weren't bad, but they would all beat you. All of my top five would beat you, and they would all be about my dad.
I'm sure.
I think
that even Jude's I nearly dying like a 19th century Civil War soldier from dysentery in Pakistan still doesn't quite match up to what happens to Sisko.
No, accidentally starting a intergalactic war maybe is probably worse than what I went through. So,
yeah, tonight we are covering the season 2 finale of Deep Space Nine, the Jem'Hadar. I don't remember who has this one. Take it away.
I do.
Okay.
Episode 26 of season 2, Jem'Hadar, was written by Ira Stephen Bear and directed by Kim Friedman. Our episode opens on Jake doing science, by which we mean the old Star Trek standby of poking something with a magic wand. Ben shows up and seems as unimpressed as we are by his school science project of the botanical equivalent of watching paint dry. So they decide to do a planetary survey in the Gamma Quadrant. I feel obligated to inject here that Jake's first suggestion as an alternative was to learn to fly a runabout, which is basically like me saying at his age, hey, as a science project, let me learn to fly an armed minivan. So
they have those. They're called Bradleys.
I'm sure that in between episodes, plenty of mundane and non-disastrous stuff happens in the Gamma Quadrant. So this is not probably not the wildly negligent choice that it seems on the surface. Sisko just seems excited to spend some time with Jake as he brags to Dax and Kira in Ops. So he's less than pumped when Jake shows up to tell him that Nog is coming along. Props to Jake, though, for doing his best to keep Nog in school. Meanwhile, in Quarks, the titular proprietor is just about to lend an ear to Morn when he accosts his boyfriend to find out if Sisko is going to let him turn the entire station into a vending machine. When Nog shows up to tell him he won't be working because of the trip to the Gamma Quadrant, we see the shine of shenanigans in his beady little eyes. Cue theme song! Quark shows up and further rains on Sisko's father-son bonding parade by hitting him with an improved Ferengi impressions of humans guilt trip. Sisko, aware he's no longer in a normal day but in an episode of Star Trek Day, gives a stressed laugh and assents. They arrive at the
planet. I love his just like, this is fine. This is fine. I guess we're doing this now.
It is absolutely the laugh of someone who appreciates that they have stepped out of a normal day into one of those days.
Yeah.
They arrive on the planet, and Sisko monologues for our benefit that this planet is supposedly like Earth's Devonian period. Apparently that doesn't mean it's full of Satan-looking aliens, since apparently that's Star Wars and not
that's
Star Trek.
That's Devonians.
I was close.
Devonian would be like if the Earth was populated by a cool gender fluid person who did a lot of cool art. That is just a Jude and me joke. So listeners, just forget you heard that. They're possibly the worst joke I've made in this entire series.
That's very good though. I like that one. And instead, it means that it's just full of plants and bugs. I'm sure he won't be proven wrong. Sisko sees a natural paradise, while Quark sees exploitable resources and the Ferengi version of Chokich. With his lobes lubed, he settles into his sales pitch to no avail. Sisko checks in on the boys, who are hard at work, then makes jambalaya for dinner, which everyone, including Nog, who says he's developing an appreciation for human food, enjoys. Except Quark, who is just itchy and cranky. As they settle in to rest, Jake and Sisko reminisce about a trip with Jennifer, but are interrupted by a flaming Ferengi. Literally, for once, not figuratively, as Quark is on fire, having reached across the campfire and lit his arm on fire.
And also, he does not understand stop, drop, and roll.
No, he just stands there screaming.
And waving his arm around.
It's terrific. Sisko puts him out and deals with his temper tantrum, Nug runs off, frustrated with his uncle for inserting himself into the trip for his own commercial ends, and Jake follows, leaving Sisko and Quark to argue until a weird alien lady shows up, shoots CGI at Sisko, then advises that they run from the Jem'Hadar, who promptly decloak Predator style. Jake and Nog return to the camp to find everyone missing and boot prints in the dirt. Sisko, Quark, and the alien have been imprisoned in a glowing circle in generic cave set. They start to talk, and the alien, whose name is Eris, is shocked that they've never heard of the Jem'Hadar, who are the most feared soldiers of the Dominion. They're sent to take what the Dominion cannot have by negotiation, which doesn't say much about the Ferengi's offerings. Eris's planet was offered entry into the Dominion because they wanted the people for their telekinetic powers. When the planet refused, the Jem'Hadar invaded. Eris says she was lucky enough to be off-planet at the time, but that didn't last. Sisko goes to work trying to break Eris's suppression collar, while Jake and Nog use the tricorder to track Sisko. And Quark's incessant complaining finally brings the Jem'Hadar to tell him to shut the fuck up. When Ben demands to know why they are being held, the unhelpful answer is, the Founders desire it, but won't elaborate on what or who the Founders are. Eris doesn't even believe they exist. The Jem'Hadar, meanwhile, is just annoyed that the first Alpha Quadrant aliens he's met are human and Ferengi, as opposed to something impressive like a Romulan or a Klingon, showing an uncomfortable familiarity with the Alpha Quadrant. Jake and Nog, meanwhile, wisely decide that discretion is the better part of valor and try to beam Sisko and Quark up off the planet from the runabout, and, failing that, return to the station for help. Unfortunately, Sisko has left the parking brake on and locked it via the computer, so they're out of luck.
It really is. That's what it is. It's just Sisko's got the keys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On DS9, a Jem'Hadar ship comes through the wormhole and their commander beams aboard, right through DS9's shields. He informs them that he has Sisko and orders them to stay out of the wormhole. To make his point, he also walks through the containment field they think they've got him trapped in and hands Kira a Bajoran pad with a list of ships they've destroyed. He informs her they've wiped out New Bajor as well. The ship also slips their tractor beam and returns through the wormhole. The Odyssey, a galaxy-class ship like the Enterprise, arrives with orders from the Federation. Suspend all traffic until they can assess the situation with the Jem'Hadar. The ops staff insists on coming with the Odyssey in upgraded runabouts, which the captain of the Odyssey, Captain Keough, who looks like the Picard your mom says you have at home, assents to. Kira offers Odo the chance to stay. I'm not entirely clear why, but he insists on going so he can look out for his boyfriend. We're going to talk about this in the discussion, but it's very clear that he is insistent that he is going just for Quark.
Yes, it is explicit. Just
for Quark. On the runabout, Jake and Nog do their best to disable the autopilot to circumvent Sisko's lock, but discover that that also means they're going to have to manually pilot the ship. They're drunkenly wobbling their way away from the planet when the three ships arrive. On the planet, Quark finally picks the lock on Eris's TK inhibitor while admiring the sophistication of the lock and the small size of the collar and musing on the market for it in the Alpha Quadrant. As soon as it's off, she breaks the field and the Jem'Hadar arrive and Sisko fucking chumps a Jem'Hadar. So does Quark, saving Sisko's life. They flee through the forest and then they are beamed up by Jake and Nog. The ships engage. Well, this is a sort of out of order because I was trying to consolidate things. The ships engage with the Jem'Hadar while Jake, Nog, and O'Brien go to the planet. Then that's when they beam up Sisko and Nog and Eris. The Odyssey, meanwhile, is getting rocked. The runabouts, with their better mobility, are doing a little better, but not good enough to stop one of the Jem'Hadar ships from doing a suicide run into the Odyssey, destroying it. The runabouts flee back through the wormhole. On DS9, Quark tells Sisko that the suppression collar is, in fact, a fake. They confront Eris, and she smugly beams away to somewhere? Just out? Basically, one last kick in the shins to demonstrate the technological sophistication of the Dominion. Sisko grimly asserts he's going to be ready when the Dominion comes for a fight. And that's it.
What an episode.
Yeah.
So we finally meet the Jem'Hadar, who I did not remember being this big of bitches. The fact that Sisko absolutely fucking bodies the first Jem'Hadar he gets his hands on, and then the second one gets absolutely face-holed by Quark, belies my vague recollection of the Jem'Hadar being like super soldiers. But maybe I misremembered. Maybe they're not as cool. I mean, obviously this
they're definitely super soldiers. I mean, part of it is that this episode is, my interpretation of it always is that the Dominion is trying to install Eris as a spy. So they have like set up this whole thing to try to get Eris onto the station.
Yeah. I love that it's all, the whole thing comes undone because Quark is a sneaky little butthole.
Yeah.
He wants to make a buck off her off her suppression collar, and he pockets it and then takes a close look at it and recognizes what's going on. I got to tell you, though, my favorite part of this whole episode has absolutely nothing to do with the Dominion or the Jem'Hadar.
Is the camping trip?
I mean, yes, it's the camping trip, but it's specifically, it's how cute Nog is when Sisko compliments him.
It's so good.
Yes. Nog wants positive role models so bad. He wants Sisko's praise so bad. When Sisko tells him he's doing a good job, he looks like the sun has risen after a century of darkness. And then he's like, I'm starting to get a taste for human food. Like, he's all about that jambalaya. Like, It's so precious. He's never been complimented before, I don't think. I don't think he's ever gotten, like, positive, encouraging feedback from anyone before.
Other than Jake. But Jake would be the only one, yeah.
And so I think it's just, and I like that Sisko doesn't want Nog there initially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a lesser show would have had him be kind of a dick to Nog about it. Mm-hmm. But instead, he's inclusive with Nog when it comes to his praise. He is just as warm to Nog as he is to his own son when it comes to, like, you guys have done a good job. Like, he in no way shows his frustration that he didn't get his father-son time to Nog.
Yeah.
Sisko's such a dope dad. I talk about this in, like, every episode, but he is such a good dad, and I fucking love it. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, I know there's spaceships and aliens and stuff, but, like, Sisko's, like, dope dad energy just feels really wholesome and awesome. I love it. I mean, there's other great stuff here, but that's my favorite thing about the episode by far.
I also always love the degree to which Jake is always looking out for Nog.
Like, oh, yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. You know, Jake's here being like, hey, look, like, I know this isn't what you wanted, but, like, he's my friend and he needs to get a good grade on this assignment. Like, yeah. Yeah.
This isn't like, I don't respect my dad and I want my bro along for the ride.
I always, like, I do sort of wonder if it's like a little white lie, but that's just because I know I'm giving that.
But the
lie.
Thing is, but, like, whether or not it's a white lie, we know from other episodes that Jake is earnest about it too. Like, that, you know, it might be a white lie in this instance, especially, you know, I could absolutely see, you know, as Jake and Ben, like, reminisce about, you know, the last time they were on vacation, which was when Jennifer was still alive. Mm-hmm. I could definitely see where Jake would maybe, like, want an emotional buffer along.
I could see that. Yeah.
But, like, either way, it's, you know, it's totally believable that Jake would be like, hey, look, no, like, I got to help him with the science project because it's important. Hmm.
My other favorite thing about this episode is Quark in the jungle. if you've ever wondered what it's like to go on a hike or camping with Jude, it's this. Watch this episode. It's Quark is me. Cranky, ill-tempered, complaining.
I feel like I always, like, go into any sort of camping trip being like, imagine myself as Sisko, but I always walk away as Quark.
Yeah. You should not take me camping ever. That's what I have to say.
I love that Quark says the classic Midwest line, it's not the heat, it's the humidity.
Which is hilarious.
Funny. It's so fucking funny.
Because, I mean, I don't know. Maybe they haven't introduced that yet.
Yeah, they haven't introduced Ferenginar yet. But Ferenginar is raining like 100% of the time.
Maybe that's why he doesn't live on Ferenginar now.
Maybe.
I also love Quark is like constantly scratching his lobes. So he's like, basically, he's got like jock itch the whole first half of the episode, which I think is very, very funny. Yeah, that cracked me up.
Thank you for that image.
Two things I particularly disliked about this episode.
Okay.
Okay.
One, what is with the super weird rant that Quark goes on at the like most inopportune moment? Like, don't get me wrong, I like the contents of the rant. Like, I like the idea that Quark is like, you humans look down on us because we remind you of your past. But guess what, bucko? We never had concentration camps or slavery. And I think that's a fascinating bit of information. Like, I don't know how true it is because I don't believe anything Quark says. But I think it's a fascinating idea that the worst, the Ferengis hit capitalism early and then just locked in on like that one sin and just went all in there.
That is accurate.
I also think it's fucking bananas that they somehow went all in on capitalism and yet never developed slavery. That's fucking wild to me. But
I mean,
yeah, that one I don't quite believe.
So I think that I would think that from the depictions we have seen of Ferengi culture, that the Ferengi say they have never had slavery, but wage slavery is a thing.
Yeah.
I could also see them having like indentured servitude too. Yeah.
Something that I find very funny in this episode is a small bit, but Dax and the captain of the Odyssey, Captain Keogh.
Yeah, discount who, Picard. Yeah.
I just assume that like the weird, like their energy. I'm like, did Curzon and this man bang?
They I'm did fairly something. Certain.
Yeah, they have some sort of history.
Yeah, I like that everyone assumes they hate each other, like, and then Kira's like, I thought he hated you, and Dax is like, I never said that.
As he's like, hey, want to work on my ship?
Yeah.
Want to work on my ship?
That was a very, am I wrong though? This is like, I've made this joke like three times, but am I wrong that Keogh is basically Picard run through like stable diffusion?
I mean, I think what it more is that just like, he's an unremarkable dude. He's performing a serviceable like stock character role.
I have a more nuanced reason for this though. He's got that same thin physique as Picard. He's got almost no hair. He's got that same, he has like the discount version of Picard's gravitas. It really does look like Picard, like discount Picard to me.
So here's a funny thing. This aired 6 weeks after the end of TNG, and the trailer for this episode showed the Odyssey getting blown up, and people thought that they were going to blow up the Enterprise.
That is absolutely hilarious, and I love it.
I was looking up stuff for the episode, and I was just like, oh, that's so funny.
What a way to show that the Dominion are serious business, like blowing up a galaxy class ship.
The invincible galaxy class, and it gets bodied by a Jem'Hadar ship.
Except like we've only seen it's funny because like this is like the third non-Enterprise galaxy class we see, and two of them have been it.
Well, you gotta illustrate how like it's a classic thing like to show the stakes of a situation, you blow up something big.
It's like the existence of Worf, right?
Yeah.
Like Worf exists in part to be thrown around so that you can see how scary something is.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, when a galaxy class ship shows up, you know that it's going to bite it.
Yeah.
I do appreciate that they put in the like little bit as like the audience reassurance TM where they're like, yes, you know, it will take that long to take all of the non-essential personnel off of this ship because we've all watched TNG. We all know that ship is like chock full of children.
And whales. Yeah.
Yeah. Because like, God, the galaxy classes are just so weird because it's like, you know,
I'm so looking forward. For a peek behind the curtain, we're doing a thing with a fanfic author next week, and I specifically want to talk about this with them.
All right.
Because, yeah, I mean, so, like, yeah, the Galaxy Class are, like, Starfleet's big, like, oh, hey, we'll like, you know, we've got these big floating science labs.
Yeah, it's like half science lab, half like, you know, luxury four-star hotel slash cruise liner, half warship.
It's like how, like, I mean, to take it to a place of history, how, like, dreadnoughts were there for, like, to show off and like be the nationalist version of a dick waving contest.
Mm-hmm. Well, they talk about the fact that, like, the Enterprise is the flagship and the Galaxy Class are like the flagships.
It is the flagship of an exploration fleet.
Yeah, it's a big dick that you can throw out to the edge of the sector to show how cool you are.
Yes.
Yep.
The other thing I need to go ahead. If you have more ship shit, go on, because I have one more complaint about this episode.
I mean, I think I love the design of the Jem'Hadar attack fighters.
Yeah.
Because it's like they're alien in a way that, like, I think one thing that Star Trek when they put their mind to it, like when they introduce a new species and, like, they decide that, like, we're going to make this, like, a recurring player, this is just Star Trek in general, but they have great things for, like, creating a visual language. And, like, unlike, say, like, the Cardassians, which have their little fish, they have, like, I mean, it's like they've got the forehead spoon, but, like, as a ship. Mm-hmm. and like the Romulans have the bird of prey, the Klingons also have a bird of prey, but they also have, like, they're big neck, like they're very necky.
Oh, the D7.
And all their ships that aren't the bird of prey sort of look like the D7.
Yeah, I fucking love the D7.
Yeah, and
it's such a good design.
I think it's, like, it's just interesting, and it's like, and meanwhile, like, the Dominion has these, like, they're like little scarabs.
Yeah,
like they're like little bug ships, and like, and instead of, like, being like the, like, I think it is interesting, like, that the Dominion don't come in with, like, big fuck off ships. It's a bunch of, like, smaller assholes.
Well, when their ships hit as hard as those ships do, they don't need to be big, do they?
Yeah.
Okay. My big complaint with this episode is, in the last episode, if you have ears, you probably heard me volubly lose my shit at the suggestion that there was going to be a Kira Odo ship. And you assured me, kind of, that that was not what was happening. And then this episode...
I said that was not the writer's intention. I didn't say, I will never lie to you.
Well, it felt like a lie.
I said nothing.
Because this episode comes along and there are some meaningful glances in this episode that clearly makes...
All I said was that the writers did not intend that. What the actors are doing...
They intended it in this goddamn episode. And everything I said before, I say again. No, 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 no. I hate this. No, no, no. I cannot emphasize enough how much I do not want a Kira Odo ship. I hate it. I hate it a lot. And I hate it.
Good to know.
Cool.
Good to know. You are on the record.
Yes. All right. I love the boys in the RV trying to hotwire a car.
It's so good. It's just Jake ripping stuff out of the computer. Just like what does this do?
The pile of ice linear chips is just so funny.
It's remarkable that thing still runs at all.
O'Brien, when he gets here, is like, it can fly, I guess.
I wish we had gotten, like, a 12-second scene of O'Brien, like, looking at the pile of isolinear chips and just his face just, like, just dropping in just abject horror at having to try and put this nonsense back together.
Yeah.
I also like Nog. Like, I have a good feeling about that one. Whoop.
Warp core. Warp
field collapse. Warp core.
Yeah. Clearly, Nog is not a born engineer.
Well, speaking of good ships, though, and not the kind that fly around, we have some real Quoto content here. Because Odo's little speech of like y'all are gonna look out for Sisko and the boys, but nobody's gonna be looking out for Quark. And like, as my arch nemesis, I am like indebted to, you know, I am like honor bound to protect him.
It is the wildest thing I've seen on this show, maybe.
It's like big, like only I am allowed to kill that little shit.
Not even that. It isn't even as overtly hostile as like only I can kill him. It is, I'm going for Quark because none of the rest of you will look out for him the way I will. In isolation, if that was the only scene of those two characters you saw, and I said, he's going to get his boyfriend, you would say, yes, that tracks.
Yeah.
It is unironically a romantic gesture. And let me put it this way. It is more overtly romantic than anything that has happened between Kira and Odo thus far.
So I watched this episode like the first time, I think I was either 13 or 14. I would have been in like seventh or eighth grade. So it's like it would have been 14 or 15. And the thing that immediately was a red flag for me that I jumped on was, as a mythology nerd as a kid, when she said her name was Eris,
me too.
I was like, bitch.
That is not a name with positive connotations.
Yeah.
Star Trek writers kind of putting the writing on the side of the, you know, on the side of the ship there.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about a production thing here.
Yes.
The Jem'Hadar resemble an alien that we've already seen before.
Really?
T'Sk.
Yeah.
Like, there's differences, but there's some similarities too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And apparently that was something that was apparent that they...
Was that intentional?
That it was, like, in the original script for this episode... that the shroud was supposed to, like, their like little cloaking thing is supposed to be like similar to like a noteworthy point.
Are they supposed to be like derived, like a cousin species, or derived from T'Sk species?
I think the idea was that it was like, that was maybe where the idea came from, though there will never be any mention of this on screen.
Hold on to that thought, because we will get more information about like the kind of the origins of the Jem'Hadar and more information about their species. So hold on to that thought.
Okay.
Because I think that's a very interesting thought, Justin. Yeah. Thinking about the canon on the nature of the Jem'Hadar.
Yeah.
Can I just say the Jem'Hadar, the first thing I noticed about them is that they've got a fat cable sticking into their neck.
Yeah,
and I was like, why would you not just grab that?
Well, good eye.
What is the good eye? What is the? I don't know what it is. But it feels very like grab me. So it's either unimportant, or it's very important. And the fact that nobody yanks it out is wild, and therefore someone will yank it out, and it'll be a plot point. But it's like, it's this giant cable that goes right into the goddamn jugular. Like, what is... It's a very noticeable, like, visual detail to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Keep that in mind.
That's a surprise thing that will come in handy later.
Okay.
I have a thought here that... do we want to have this as a headphones moment for the kayfabe here?
Sure.
I don't think you actually have to, Jude.
I don't actually have to do it?
No, because you've already seen the next episode, but Yeah, but yeah, so headphones wanted
here. I'm so happy that you're using kayfabe. It's nice to know I've corrupted this podcast.
It's fascinating to me that Eris doesn't recognize that Odo is a founder.
So this is something that I read in the information from the DS9 companion. There are a couple things that are in this episode that don't make sense, and we're just we didn't know what we were doing yet.
Yeah,
Odo is not recognized as a founder. They had not decided that the founders were changelings yet.
Fascinating.
And also the telekinetic abilities, which will never come up again. they had all these ideas, and I think, and as they took like their summer break or whatever to like start season three and everything, they decided just like they settled on the idea that the changelings were founders, which, great, we'll talk about that next episode. But they also like they were like, the telekinetic thing is just silly, and
I assumed that they didn't recognize them because they only look like Odo in the next episode, or Odo, that they look like Odo, not the other way around.
That's a whole thing that we will brush under the rug forever.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
It's fine.
Okay.
Well, it's a recursive loop. It is. It's the human set. It's the, no, that's not the one. It's the Ouroboros.
Got it.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. All the founder, like, we never learn why all the founders look like Odo. It makes no sense. It's fine. Move on.
Noted. All right. Do we have anything else to say about this one?
I think I'm good with moving on to like our season two wrap up.
Yeah, let's do it.
I will say that one of my favorite moments from this is the autopilot disengaged. Great, steady course cessation. Oh, autopilot disengaged. It's like you can see it coming from a mile away.
It's still funny.
It cracks me up every time.
Yeah.
And also Jake's joke of when he and Sisko are like talking about, you know, scheduling another vacation in the future. I love his little joke of like, and I'm sure Nog will be ready too.
Yeah.
And Cisco's like, oh God. And Jake's like, don't worry, I'm kidding. Or am I?
Jake's fucking hilarious. I love Jake's character.
Yeah.
I'm really interested to see over the next couple of seasons where Jake goes. Because
a lot taller.
We know he's not going. I believe it. Because I've seen the first episode of the first two episodes of season three.
Yeah.
And he's already taller in that one.
Yeah. By a lot.
But I'm interested because I know he's already said he's not going to go into the Federation or go into the Starfleet.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe he changes his mind, but that felt like a.
Yeah.
They didn't feel like a fake out.
This seems like a perfect seg into predictions.
Yeah. So. I think the first thing I want to do before we do that is, what was your favorite episode for both of you? What was your favorite episode of season two?
Okay, hold on. Give me 1 second to look at. I got to look at the list of season two episodes.
For me, I'm always a sucker for Blood Oath.
Oh, that's a good one. Wow, I forgot that the Shitty Trill was the start of this season. Mm-hmm. Holy shit.
Yeah. I'm looking at the list and seeing what my favorite like garbage episode is. Yeah. Because Blood Oath is my like actual favorite, I think.
I have to go with The Wire, I think, just because that's a little bit like that's my spy bullshit.
I was going to say The Wire would be high on my list. Blood Oath was amazing, but I absolutely love Garrick and Bashir. They're, all bits aside, they're two of my absolute favorite characters in the show. And that was such, their dynamic is so good. And I loved everything about that one. So The Wire would be high on my list. I think the other one that would be really high on the list would definitely be Blood Oath. I think would probably be there. Was the one with, what's her name? That was season one, right? With Deanna Troi's mom.
Oh, Luxana's season one, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think those would be the ones for me.
Okay.
My other favorite, I really love Necessary Evil as an episode.
Yeah, okay. That's good. Yeah.
It's a fun, it does some fun stuff with Odo, and I feel like it develops his character quite a bit in directions that are not, like, fash, which I appreciate. Yeah. And, like,
he gets to not be the wet fascist.
Yeah, and, like, you know, I always love the Noir Odo episodes, and it's one of my favorite ones that's just, like, a fun one to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like just a mini procedural episode. It's like watching an episode of like Columbo or something.
All right, Jude. Three predictions.
Okay, three predictions.
That we will not write down because we never remember to write these down.
Yeah. I don't know if it's going to happen in season three, but clearly we're going to get a war against the Dominion. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that because I've heard the phrase Dominion War.
Yeah, I don't think that counts. That's too easy.
Season three predictions. Well, okay. We're going to see a lot of the Dominion, but I don't think it's going to be every single episode. I'm going to say like 60-40 somewhere in there. Like, I don't think they're going to go straight from like no Dominion to the whole season's about it. I think we're going to get one season of transition into full-scale war show kind of thing. Okay. So that's one. Trying to think of some good ones.
Yeah, like what I think maybe is some happen. Character
What are your Jake predictions?
Yeah.
I think Jake is going to be... What is Jake's... Jake feels like he's leaning towards like liberal arts.
Okay.
Interesting. Okay.
All right. Writer, journalist, something like that. Right. Kind of what I'm feeling with Jake.
Interesting.
I think we're going to get, I'm going to call this like 2.5, which is that I think we're going to get a lot more Nog too. Maybe that's just wishful thinking. Maybe I just want more Nog.
Okay.
But I'm hoping we get more Nog. I think we're going to get, and then for my third one, I think that we're going to see more Garrick because I think the Cardassians are going to play a role in whatever's coming with the Dominion since they're the largest nearby power that they'll obviously get involved. So I think we'll see more of Garrick as well.
All right. I think those are some good
Yeah.
Like textual inferences.
Yeah.
All right. I'm looking forward to season three because this is when all of the people who weren't vibing with the serial nature of DS9 go to Voyager.
Yeah, I noted when I was looking at the list of episodes that there are some I recognized some names. Yeah. In who's working on season three, episodes one and two.
Yeah, there's going to be some fun ones there. All right. So we're going to start next episode. We're going to start season three with The Search, part one and two. Until next time, just keep circling. Keep circling. Just keep circling.
Just keep circling.
Yeah.
Just keep circling.
The Babylon Project is an independent production. All views expressed on the show are our own. Clips from the original show remain property of the original owner. Music information can be found in the show notes. The rest of the show is licensed under a Creative Commons 4.0 share-alike no derivatives license.